Hello, everyone. Welcome to our little Focus On series that we do. Today, I get to introduce somebody I've known for quite a while. I don't know her all that well, but I've known her probably close to, is it about 15 years?
It's been 6 years that I've been in hypnosis, and I think I might have probably met you one of my first years at the NGA.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because you were running around, and you're very active, and you're doing some things, and a person that should be followed and looked at what they're doing. I'll pick your brain on a few of those things as we get going. But my first question I always ask in this Spotlight On is, what got you into hypnosis? Because it's not something that people go, I want to be when they're kids.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'll just give you the short version of this. I went through a really low point in my life. And I basically ended up, I know you talk about, like, you help a lot of people with addiction and things like that. So my problem, I had been drinking too much in my life. I was really unhappy. And I solved that problem, and I basically wanted something more in my life. I had, like, this really, really low point, and I'm like, you know, this job isn't cutting it, and these other things in my life are just, it is not working for me. You know, you get to this place where you're supposed to be happy. You know, the job, the car, the house, everything. I was a software engineer, had everything on paper, looked really good, but got to this really, really low point in my life. And I actually ended up in the hospital deciding, you know, I still remember sitting there actually on the edge of the gurney, kind of swinging my legs. And I'm on the edge of the gurney. I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, this is ridiculous. And I needed a change in my life. And this is where I started doing, like, some seeking, some spiritual seeking. And I found hypnosis. And so I really consider that hypnosis changed my life. And so ever since I found hypnosis, I decided to do it professionally. I became a full-time hypnotist in less than a year. And I've been doing it ever since. And so I'm really grateful for hypnosis in my life. And I think that whole process of having, like, a really low point and real struggle and suffering has really helped me to help other people. And, you know, I think we all go through some experiences in our life where you come out the other side stronger and better, and then it helps you to help people who are going through the same thing.
Yeah. Well, and I do know our field is full. Usually people come in because they experience some kind of epiphany or transformation with the art and skill of hypnosis or NLP, one of these things. And then they want to learn more. And then it just starts this self-generating thing. Many people do it full-time. Some people do it part-time. As you all know, because I see a lot of conferences, there's a lot of people that love hypnosis that do it occasionally. Doesn't mean that they're not good at it. It's just, you know, they might have a great other career they don't want to leave right now. Mm-hmm. And, but it's a growing field. And, you know, we're seeing the field grow in new and exciting ways. So my next question is, you know, in the time you've been in the field, you've seen it change and shift and morph. And where do you see that, in your opinion, that it's going to go?
I see a lot more people who are accepting of alternative therapies in general. And I think that hypnosis is probably going to head along the lines like where neuroscience is teaching us and bringing us. And so I'm a real big believer on how do we understand what's really happening in the brain, high performance, what is happening with the nervous system. People really like to know that and understand, okay, what is happening in the brain? One of the things that I love to talk about and teach is for us to overcome our own biology. We have a primitive mind, right? We have that reptilian brain that kind of gives us that knee-jerk reaction, and we have our limbic system, and then, you know, we have the amygdala, the fear-based response. And it's like, you know, wouldn't it be nice if everybody understood that it's not your fault if you get, like, this knee-jerk reaction? It's not your fault if you feel a fear-based response. Just notice that it's happening, and then you can overcome it. So I think that there's a lot to do with neuroscience that I'm really excited about, how people are learning more about the brain, and hypnosis is going to get integrated into that, where people have a real understanding of what's going on in their head. And once they understand it, now they can make changes. So that's where I see it headed.
Yeah, I think, you know, what I even see in that, because, as you know, I'm a psychologist, and I see in some of the writings on that side, that they're finally going, well, most of your programming took place before you had your critical factors of your mind developed, or they call it defense mechanisms. And so the best way to make those changes is by bypassing that with hypnosis, meditation, and they're really big in energy psychology and some of the world of this. So it's kind of fascinating to see it begin to mesh together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my other question I've been asking people is, because we're sitting here on Zoom recording this to be used on Facebook and YouTube and the e-zine, and I'll send you, and everybody has it. But I also see, and this is also going on, and I can relate it to psychology, there's a big fight behind the scenes about using this kind of technology for therapy. You know, Indiana is one of the first states, but Florida signed up that it looks like it's going that way, where there's a movement afoot in the psych world where it's going to break down the barriers to do cross-state psychology, right? Because, and I heard the past president of the APA say, this cat's out of the box. It's not going back in. You can't control it. And so, you know, I see it growing, and probably almost all of my clients, because I deal a lot with hypnotists and professionals in our field, are the people I end up working with, and a few actors and athletes. And I usually do almost exclusively Zoom. Yeah. So how do you feel that going? And, you know, and I know you're incorporating it.
Oh yeah. I would say, over half my private hypnosis sessions are over Zoom. Some of that is because of my books, and people are, you know, they're finding me outside my normal area. And so the only way for me to work with them, feasibly work with them, is to do Zoom. I also do a lot of, so my mentorship group and some the certification programs, we do a lot of things on Zoom as well. I think it's fantastic. One of my beliefs about why we do things, why do we make certain decisions and choices, even about food or drinking, you know, alcohol, cigarettes, some of these things, has to do with convenience. And, you know, so you've got that like instantaneous gratification type of a thing, and what is convenient for you. And so the more convenient that we can make hypnosis so that people don't have to, it doesn't have to be such a burden for them, then I think it's better. Now, that being said, we still want to have some, I think, guidelines in order to make this type of remote session really feasible. So when I work with somebody over Zoom, one of the things that I do, I will always meet with my potential client for a consultation. I always do that over Zoom too. And this has really helped a lot, because I don't want to be spending time on a hypnosis call with somebody dealing with technical difficulties. Like, it's not, I don't feel like it's my position. I don't want to be their IT support person. And so that's how I solve that problem. So, you know, the way that I think about it is kind of like the pendulum is swinging back and forth, and it's kind of swinging over the, you know, let's do things remotely there. And so let's put some things in place to make sure that we're still giving our clients a really high quality service. And by having some structure in place, I think that we can make that happen pretty easily.
Yeah, and like you say, it opens up the scope of the people you can work with, because, you know, and I know that one person that has a practice in the, a guy that has it in the Washington, D.C. area, but as someone that has it in the Atlanta area. And mm-hmm. when you think about the traffic in those two areas, it can literally take you an hour and a half to get to your session for a 45 minute to an hour session, then an hour and a half home. So shoot your whole day. So, right. You know, that's something that's growing. So of all the things in the world of hypnosis that you get to deal with, we all have certain things we love, you know, of course mine is addictions, cause that's my big thing. And, you know, this technology didn't just save my life, gave me a life worth living. But then after that, it's probably the performing arts and sports. That's, you know, what I mainly stick to. Not that I don't do everything. When I had my big Suncoast Hypnosis Center, 60% of my business was weight loss, you know, because I'm lazy. It's like I was trained, pick the low-hanging fruit first, you know. And but we all have certain things that we love. So what are some of the things you really like to work with in the in the world of hypnosis and why?
Okay, well, one of the first things I love to help people with was weight loss. I can tell you it's weight loss, it's alcohol, and it's stress. And those are the three things that I personally had to fix for myself. So I've lost over 50 pounds. So the first thing for me, I lost it initially with Weight Watchers. And, you know, they do a great job, but when it stops working, when people get tired of counting points, that's why I wrote my first book, Reprogram Your Weight. And Reprogram Your Weight, my first book, is basically all client stories. So it's a really cool book because I have a lot of my grads and a lot of other hypnotists will read it and just tell stories from that book to even grow their own practice. You know, and one of the ways that I like, you know, people to do that, they just say, hey, a colleague of mine was working with a client. You know, that's how we can tell stories about our colleagues in order to help people that are working right in front of us. So I would say weight loss. And I love working with weight loss because a lot of my clients, you know, my ideal client for a weight loss client is like a 55-year-old woman who is very empathetic, very loving, always puts other people first, but has very low self-esteem. And I just love seeing like the light and the life come back in a client when they aren't so down on themselves anymore and they're losing weight and they're feeling better. And you can just kind of see the life come back in them and they're happy again and they're singing and they're dancing and they're doing all of those things. So you're really, you know, giving somebody their life back. I love that. I do love helping people stop drinking. They come to me like all varying stages of the, I don't want to call it a disease. I don't know how you feel about that word, but you know, varying stages of where they're at along the pathway of that debilitation that comes with drinking too much, partially because I went through it myself and I know what it's like. I know how horrific and terrible it is. And so I love helping people with that problem and giving them their life back. I'm also really good at it because they can't really mess with me. They can't really, you know, like fool me, you know. Part of the problem, of course, is that people complain about, at least with alcohol, is that, you know, alcohol makes you a liar, right? They kind of lie about everything, how much they're drinking, where they're going, and all of those things. And, you know, a lot of those folks are lying to themselves first. And so one of the things that I find, you know, you can't really lie to me very well. I can catch that. And I hold that space for my clients and help them figure out why, you know, how is the alcohol serving them and how can we flip that around for them? And the other thing is stress. I mean, if I had to just pick one, what I said earlier about neuroscience and like, what is the brain doing? Like, I'm fascinated by neuroscience and brain science and brain chemistry and how it is impacting our very daily lives. So kind of like everyday hypnosis, how does that come to bear on our clients when they're giving a speech, when they're too stressed out at work? So I love solving the problem when people are massively stressed and come to me. Of course, the presenting issue is, you know, they're not sleeping or they aren't getting along with people in their life. They're so stressed that they can hardly communicate to me, that type of a thing. They might be shaking in the chair. So those are the three things that I really love helping people with.
Oh, cool. And they coincide with things in your own personal life, like a lot of us, you know. Yeah. But the neuroscience behind the stress stuff is fascinating. Mm-hmm. That the human organism was not meant to live in the current environment we've created, yep, which is 24/7 stress. Yep. And we're not taught, especially in the Western world, we're not taught how to relax.
Not at all. We're not supposed to relax, right? You know, so Americans, it seems to me, are running on sugar and caffeine in the morning and sugar and alcohol in the evening. And that's just how a lot of people are operating their life. You know, they wake up, they have their coffee with some sugar in it and that gets them going. At the end of the day, they come home and they're having that glass of wine or a beer and then maybe they're having some sugar and that's what's helping them sleep. And they're not sleeping well, so then they're waking up and having the sugar and the caffeine again. And that just cycle perpetuates with, I don't even know how many Americans live that cycle, but I would say it's a huge percentage.
Oh yeah, I know somebody, they were really excited and because they were going to do a stress management thing for a big company. And so they were like, they're all excited. And I'm like, well, let me know how it goes. I'm like, we'll see. I'm a cynic about all this stuff with big companies, right? And he gets there. And of course, nobody comes to his seminar inside the building, right? I mean, he got paid, but there was nobody there. Jeez. And of course, he's brokenhearted. And I said, well, flip it around and talk about, you will increase these people's productivity. Mm-hmm. And he goes, but I don't want to do that seminar. I said, no, do the stress seminar. Just repackage it as doing that. So then he got all these people in. And he said it dawned on him at one of the breaks. It was like middle management. And that the guys and the girls in the back were talking. And they got into basically a pissing contest, because this company had a use it or lose it vacation thing. And they were bragging how much vacation time they've lost. Right? Like, well, I gave up a week. I gave up this and I gave up that. Right? And it suddenly dawned on him that that's why, you know. And then the one guy, he started talking about it. And one of the upper managers said, well, one of the problems with this company is if you took your 2 weeks off in a row and we figure out we don't need you, you're not coming back.
Jeez.
And then wow. I go, I'll bet you this company, it will remain nameless, also constantly complains that there is no employee loyalty.
Absolutely. Right? Of course. So these people can't take time off, or they're bragging about being too stressed. And you see that in other forms too, where people are talking, oh, I can't, I'm so busy, I'm so busy, I'm so busy, I'm so busy. And that just becomes kind of something that people are bragging about almost.
Well, I know one guy in our profession who remained nameless, but he was a lawyer for a big law firm. And he started realizing that you can't make it to partner until you've had two heart attacks in this place, right? So he does hypnosis and a small law practice, and he's like, good, and he's happy.
Good for him. Yeah. But that's so interesting about that class though. So it's like how it was framed to them. Nobody wanted to show up to a class that was de-stressing, because that basically is not what people want to be at that company. They don't want to be de-stressed. They want to be productive. So reframing it was the actual right, was the perfect approach.
Yeah. And we all know if you lower your cortisol levels, you will be more productive. That's mm-hmm. just, every study keeps proving that. Even just, you know, Japan's getting it right with their little, you know, nap time in the afternoon and meditation pods. They're
okay.
putting meditation pods in. They're going to 4-day work weeks.
I saw that. I saw Microsoft.
And it's 8-hour days. It's not 10-hour days.
Okay.
It's 4 8-hour days. But the research was pointing out that the average employee was like 10 to 20% more effective. They didn't get less done. But a lot of this gets into our Americans. More equals more. We need more.
Yeah. More of everything.
Yeah. So where do you want to, and I know now you're doing a lot of training. What got into you becoming a trainer for hypnosis?
You know, in my previous work as a software engineer, I did do a lot of teaching, and I just love teaching. I learn more when I'm teaching. I like that role. I like helping other people. But the main reason was because I feel so strongly about the power of hypnosis. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, I can only really help, you know, so many people a year, right? And at the time I was seeing, and I still am, my sessions are about an hour and a half each. And I'm seeing one person at a time. I don't have, you know, audio rooms or anything like that. I mean, now I have a center and I have four other hypnotists here. But at the time, I was thinking, oh my gosh, this works so well. And I projected out, but I really can only see, it was something like 160 people a year. Like I can only really serve 160 people a year through the whole process, and just estimating out how many sessions, that type of a thing. And I'm like, that's just not enough. If I really want to have the impact that I know hypnosis can make and serve as many people as I want, the only way for me to do that is to start teaching. And so I started teaching. I've trained over 100, and I think we're at 140 now, people. And my goal is to train 1,000. And I assume that each hypnotist I train will see over 1,000 clients in their career. And if I have 1,000 hypnotists, now that's 1,000,000 people helped with the power of hypnosis. So that's like my company's overall goal, is to help 1,000,000 people with the power of hypnosis, which kind of, you know, it crosses this threshold where now we're starting to get into mainstream thinking, where people are, at least I hope, where people are kind of thinking, hey, maybe I should go to the hypnotist first before I go do something else. Because I've had 2, 3, 4 people in my life who have used hypnosis now that has worked. So I'm going to start there. That's what I want.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. And we'll also do this again at the end, but how do people get in touch with you? Because I know we talked earlier and you do you know, 5 or 6 classes, hypnosis classes a year, because they're, mm-hmm. you know, 8 to 10 days a class, you know, a class. So yeah. How would people get in touch with you in beautiful Washington there?
In Bellingham, yeah. So my website is cascadehypnosistraining.com is probably the best way. But I, you know, love making personal connections with people. So feel free to friend me on Facebook, connect with me. I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn, but Facebook is right now my social platform of choice, where I really like to connect with people and understand, you know, what's going on with them. I get messages from hypnotists all over asking me questions. I love supporting people and just really helping kind of lift up our profession. So that's probably the easiest way. Facebook friend me or connect with me at cascadehypnosistraining.com. Cool.
Well, that leads to a good question, because I see that you're kind of beginning to master the Facebook marketing aspect. Where, mm-hmm. You know, I'm noticing you're popping up. How long? Tell us a little bit about what got you into that. You don't have to give us the secrets behind it, but
I'll give you the secrets. I'm not doing it. That's the secret.
Okay.
So I would say I am good at Google AdWords. I've been good at Google AdWords for a long time now, called Google Ads. I will do that myself, but I got to a place where, you know, here's one of the things that I do. I calculate out how much my hourly rate is worth, right? And then I figure out, like, if I'm going to see this many clients, my hourly rate, and it's pretty high, let's say, okay? So it's like $300, $400 an hour is what, you know, and so I'm seeing clients for, you know, an hour and a half, you know, easily getting around $500 a session for my clients at this point. And so my hourly rate is pretty high. And so if I can't make that up on my own, I'm going to hire it out. And somebody else is going to do a better job than me. So I have a Facebook team. And because, you know, AdWords, I could figure out. There were, you know, you have your search campaigns we're talking about. You have your title and description, and there are limited characters. And so that was the box that you get put in Google was a little bit easier. Facebook, there are so many choices, and I got frustrated. So I did hire a team to help with Facebook. It's still a little bit frustrating. You know, Facebook marketing is different than Google. Google search, people are searching for you right then and there. And so they're kind of highly qualified. Or Facebook is still interruptive marketing. You know, you're kind of interrupting their feed. So you tend to get lower quality leads from Facebook. But I can tell you that there are some great teams out there that will help you build some high quality Facebook campaigns. And so that's my recommendation. I'm not going to do that one myself.
Okay. Well, you bring up a good point, because one of the things when you first get started, you do everything yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. And funny, I had a boss when I was first in sales, and I forget what it was I had to do on a Saturday, something with my car. And he goes, I said, yeah, I got to do that. And he goes, why don't you have it done? I said, well, you know, and he goes, what you just said, he goes, son, this was back in the early 80s. He goes, I'm paying you $30 an hour. If you can get it done cheaper than your hourly rate, don't waste. And you don't like doing it. And that's the other thing. If you like doing it, working on your car, do it. Like you just said, you kind of like Google AdWords and playing with it. But, mm-hmm. but also too, it's like, you know, when you see people, and that's a good tip we can all take out there to all of our students. When you see these people grow their practice like you've done, like Jason Lynette's done, like mm-hmm. Scott McFall's done. I'm trying to think of different people from different ways that they build it. But one of the things they all do, and you've done and I've done, is you get to the point where I can't do this. I don't want to learn how to do it. I'll get somebody to do this so I can do this.
Right.
You know, and let go of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that for me is part of, because I used to work a lot. And I did have fun trying to figure things out. And I did do some of my own Facebook marketing at the beginning. Facebook marketing and ads, you know, 5 years ago, did they even have ads 5 years ago? Whenever they first started doing paid ads, I was there. And it was a little simpler. They didn't have so many options, and they didn't have as many, you know,
algorithms,
like audiences and retargeting and, you know, like so many different things. Like it's just overwhelming. So yeah, that's when I started giving it to somebody else, because I was not having fun with it.
Plus, as soon as you figure it out, they change it.
Oh my gosh. That's part of it, isn't it? It's part, I mean, the people that you hire, every team that I've hired, they're like, well, I'm in this group, this expert group where we talk about all the Facebook changes. And I'm in this expert group where we talk about all the Facebook changes. And it's like, I'm paying somebody to be an expert in this, and they're taking lots of time to remain being an expert in the field. So there is no way for me to do as good of a job at Facebook advertising as somebody else that I hire, in my opinion.
I usually ask a lot of people one question. It's kind of weird, which is, what is one of your horror stories from the world of hypnosis?
You know, I once had a lady. Oh, this was tough. She, I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but, this is my philosophy. Like, when people have physiological reactions while you're working with them, that is from the unconscious mind, from the body's consciousness responding to whatever is being presented. And so sometimes clients will get dizzy, they will get a headache, they'll get certain symptoms in the middle of a hypnosis session. And I've always taken it to be, hey, we're close. Your body's trying to protect you from kind of going to that dangerous place, right? So anyway, I had a woman once who really did physically get ill in my office.
Oh, okay.
You know, a couple times, and it was a challenging situation because I, you know, wanted to make sure that she was doing well. And, you know, I didn't want to like rush her out of my office. At the same time, I was a solo practitioner at the time, and I had a new client coming in. And so I had to really like use all of my brain power to help her get situated and feel better. And she ended up doing awesome. So, I mean, although it was a little uncomfortable and she felt terrible, and it's never fun when you're in a business office. This does not happen in the ladies' room, right? I mean, she's sitting in the hypnosis chair grabbing the garbage can. So she felt terrible and I felt terrible. And now I'm trying to make sure that my next client. And so that was, you know, I would definitely call that a horror story. It's only happened once. It worked out just fine. And so, yeah, I'm glad that that only happened once.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And, you know, as you continue to grow and do this, I know you've written a few books. What are the books you missed in the weight loss book? I know you've written a couple others.
Yeah, so let's see. I've got them right here. My first one was Reprogram Your Weight, and that's the one I talked about earlier. This is an inspirational message full of client stories. So a lot of hypnotists like to read this book and just kind of tell the stories from this book. My second one is called Lighter, and this one is also about weight loss. This is 31 tools to help people lose weight and keep it off for life. So this is good for hypnotists too. But I love giving these to my weight loss clients. So for my weight loss clients, I give them this book and I give them a video training that comes with it. And before they even come to see me, they're already losing weight. By the way, I'm going to be talking about this at Solid Gold. So I'm going to Solid Gold.
Oh yeah. Tell us about that. Good. That'll be coming up. So that's that. Just give it, pitch it.
Well, maybe I'm letting the cat out of the bag here a little early, but
oh, it's on their website. I saw it.
Okay, I didn't know that it had been announced already. So, my talk is—I don't remember the exact phrase, but it's something like "Grow your practice by helping people lose weight with hypnosis," and that's exactly what I did. I started almost exclusively seeing weight loss clients. That was not by design. It was just because it worked so well, and I just—I mean, my practice just took off. I was seeing, you know, like a ton of clients, and they were out like 3 months, which is part of the reason why I wrote the book, because I didn't like clients coming in and then me saying, oh yeah, yes, this system works really well and I'd love to help you, but my next availability is in 3 months. So that's partially why I wrote the book, because then I could get all of everything that I'm doing in written down and start handing to people. Then I created a recording, and from that, it kind of shifted my business in very positive ways. My third one is called Can You Be a Hypnotist? The print book comes out this week. And this is all about for people who are considering coming into our profession and helping them figure out if this is something they want to do professionally or not.
Oh, okay. Cool. Cool. Mm-hmm. And so when is Solid Gold?
Gold is February, I think it's February 22nd and 23rd. It's a Saturday and Sunday. In February, let me see.
It's in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada.
I know. I love going to Las Vegas in the winter because, I mean, you're in Florida, right?
Yeah. It's hot today. It's hot.
Yeah. Is it nice? Like, is it kind of nicey there all year round? I mean, to some degree.
I've been here 21 years, never seen frost.
Okay. Yeah. So it's cold. February is the coldest and darkest month. You know, I don't care what they say about December or January. February is the worst, in my opinion, because it's not Christmas anymore, right? It's not the new year anymore. And now you're like really deep into the winter. And it's dark and it's cold. So it's awesome to get to Las Vegas. It's the 22nd and 23rd of February next year. Yeah.
And they can get info for that at the NGH.net, because I know they're starting to talk about it. I saw it in there. I got their journal of hypnotism the other day. And you've been in that for a while now, right? Mm-hmm. You've been a columnist in the Journal of Hypnotism.
Yeah, for a couple of years now, and my column is all on business building. And that's what, you know, one of the things, as much as I love hypnosis, I love building a business, because if you think about it, one of the things we really need to do as hypnotists is talk about what we do so people understand how hypnosis works and get rid of some of those misperceptions about hypnosis. But it's also, we need to be able to reach people where they are. And so I see so many hypnotists struggle with the business side of things, and they love doing hypnosis, but they don't have enough clients to really like leave their job or do what they really want to do. And so I love helping people with their business and grow their business so that they could help more people.
Oh yeah. And the, you know, that's hypnotists, just like psychologists, medical doctors, everyone in that world talks about, you know, whether the training is a few weeks or several years, okay, now you can go to work, but they don't tell you how to do it, how to build the business side. And so then people are struggling and this and that. And when I see people build their business, because I know I saw someone build a huge little practice in Dothan, Alabama. And one of the things that they talked about and they learned early on, because they were building their business, and people going, don't call it hypnosis, you know, because this is a Bible Belt, you know, and it'll go. And he tried to, you know, like talk around it. Finally, he ran some ads. This is back when you could do ad, you know, newspaper ads. He just was Dothan Hypnosis. Mm-hmm. Phone started ringing. And but this time I'm talking to him. I said, the only people I know afraid of the word hypnosis is hypnotists.
Yep.
You know, they'll call it anything but. And the public's fascinated with it. Absolutely fascinated with it. You know, just the other night on TV, well, I don't know when it was on because it was recorded. I watched it when I got back from Lebanon. But on a NCIS episode, it had a hypnotist in it. And it was very positive. It did, you know, if you really watched it, even my wife, and she just works the business side of it, but she's a trained hypnotist. She's really into past lives and mm-hmm. stuff, right? But even she goes, well, the guy playing the hypnotist was very good and what he, you know, presented it well.
Good.
So times are a changing.
Yeah.
So where do you want to take your world into the future? You said you want to help 1 million people.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So I want to help. I love the certification training and seeing private clients. I have a center now, so I have 4 other hypnotists here, which is really lovely. I have to say, a couple weeks ago, I walked out of my office after a session and there's like 2 people in the waiting area. And I see 3 of my hypnotists kind of over talking and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's happening. Like, this is so awesome to be here, like surrounded by people who are wanting to help people in the world. So I love having a center. We're teaching more classes here. And so what we're trying to build a real community here so that people really do think of coming to us for hypnosis, but also for things like, you know, stress relief and test anxiety. We're at College Town. So we're going to be doing more and more classes where we're building. So my goal, everyday hypnosis in one word, it would be, how do we bring this idea of hypnosis into everyday life? Like, oh, you have to take a test. Here's how you can use hypnosis to do that. So that's what I want to be able to do kind of here in Bellingham. Professionally, I'm super interested, like I said before, in like the neuroscience and biology of change. I love high performance. So this is for me personally. How do I become self actualized. How do I do everything in my life that I want to do? And then I'm going to help everybody else do the same thing. So I'm, you know, doing things like neurofeedback. I'm looking at really high performers and like, how do we think? How do we do? When do we take action? When do we rest? How can you be super high performing? It's just like at the gym. If you were to go and work out every single day super hard, you'd be sore the next day. Well, what about your brain? How can you really push your brain and get high coherence, you know, in the brain, which is just a measure of how well your brain is interconnected, right? So it's like you have a bunch of super highways on your brain, which allows you to have bigger thoughts with less effort, without stressing yourself out. So how do we increase brain coherence and create a lot of super high performers so that people are becoming self-actualized and living their best life? That's the direction that I'm taking my personal, you know, the center is going to keep going, and I love teaching the certification courses and all of that. But for me personally, I'm exploring high performance, and that's what I love right now.
Oh, cool, cool. Well, and I know you go to a lot of conferences, and you're you know, you teach and you do all this wonderful stuff, and it kind of links back. I think it's important for the people that are building their businesses and growing and doing that to let the new people know it can be done, and to use the analogy you just said. Was it a few weeks ago that guy broke the 2-hour marathon?
Oh my God.
Right? I think it was 2 hours, right? Which they, yeah. Much like the 4-minute mile in the 50s was physically impossible, your heart would explode. Now kids run 4-minute miles. And so it's all about part of it. This guy wrote a really cool, I think he's from Stanford, that once you see it done, it opens up your neurology that, well, it can be, if I'm willing to do the work. Because it also showed this guy's training regimen, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like, if you're willing to do the work, you could do it. You could build your practice. You could help a million people. You could go down this, right? If you're willing to do the steps to get there, right? Especially there's many people running around at the conference. That's why I tell people go to conferences, you know, whether it's the NGH or IACT or Solid Gold, HypnoThoughts, all these conferences that are out there, because then we're building the community. Right. And it reminds me of psychology. There's a diverse psychological community. There's the regression, you know, the regression people in psychology, just like in hypnosis. There's the cognitive behavioral guys. There's the rational motive guys. There's that, da, 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 da. And people go, does it bother? I said, it's just when I go to hypnosis, you have the people that love regression or past lives or energy and everything. It's like, but that's how we grow as a group. So, and you're a big part of that group, and you spell your name with a K.
Yeah. Do you like that? Is that important to you?
When I name my daughter, and I'm the one that named my daughter Erica with a K.
Oh, okay. Okay. People don't usually mention that to me. I get it.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. And it's like, yes, with a K. Cause anyway, from the acting side of it, my stage name was Eric Grant back when they made in the 70s, someone had the name William Horton.
Oh,
and you can't get your Screen Actors Guild card if someone else has that name, even if it's your birth name, has nothing to do with that. It's, you know, and so I had the name Eric Grant, E-R-I-K.
Oh, cool, cool. Well,
so, one thing, go ahead.
You know, I just wanted to mention one thing, you know, that I see a lot of people doing, because you mentioned, you know, all the things to grow your practice. One of the things that I think is important for new hypnotists to understand is sometimes doing all the things to grow your practice is the mistake. And so a lot of things that I like to talk about with my grads or even in the Journal of Hypnotism is don't do everything. You have to focus on a couple of things. So sometimes it's more about what you're not doing than what you are doing. And I see people all the time because I have a lot of grads and they're trying to, this is just normal. They're modeling what I do. And if I catch them kind of just try, and that's fine at first, just model what you know, and you're just, it's kind of like you're, when you're learning something, you're just going to copy, like, okay, now I'm getting an understanding of how this works, that type of a thing. But after a while, it's okay to have a completely different practice and do your own thing. So for everybody out there, you don't have to do all the things. If you do all the things, it's like, you know, put 10% effort into 10 different things to grow your practice. All of them will likely fail because you have 10% effort into each one. So do less and get more done.
Well, yeah, work less, make more. But you mentioned something about mentors and having mentors or coaches. You know, in my other big thing with the martial arts, one of my teachers always said, if you ever run into a master that doesn't have a master, run away. Mm-hmm. If they don't have coaches and people. Yep. And you know, one of the best things I've heard and what I used to coach people was, is what are you good at? First of all, if you're a good public speaker and you like speaking, yes, then maybe go speak at the Rotaries and this and that. If you hate it, don't do it. Skip that spot. Don't, just because they said do it, that could be the, you know, what are you good at?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be your thing. You get to craft your own thing that you really like to do. Yeah, so whatever you're good at, focus on that. Exactly.
Yeah, and get some outside eyes looking at it, you know, and because it's sometimes that fresh perspective.
Well, yeah, you know, some people think that they, like, if they train with me or they see what other people are doing, they're like, well, I have to have a center and I have to teach classes and I have to have a podcast and I have to write a book. It's like, no, it's perfectly fine. I know a lot of hypnotists who they really desire nothing more than to have a 3 to 4 day a week private practice where they're helping clients and they go home at night and that's all they're doing. They're not doing all this extra stuff because they don't want to. And that is absolutely perfectly fine. So I really don't, you know, want people to think they have to do what they're seeing other people do to be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. And just figure out what you want to do. And because sometimes we get the grass is always greener syndrome, mm-hmm. you know, oh, I want to do that. Like travel all over. And then they travel and go, I hate this.
Right. And it's hard. And yeah,
it's hard. And don't you get to see the world? No, you see the airport and the hotel.
And, you know, a lot of people that want to have a lifestyle business where they are traveling don't understand that you still have to build a business. And so this is one of the things that I talk to about with a lot of people where they're like, oh, no, you know, I see people, you know, like some hypnotists who really are traveling a lot, like yourself and other trainers. And, you know, there is a place where we reach a point where, yeah, we are traveling a lot, but it's been years. Like, you don't just get out of the gate and do that. You know, if you want that lifestyle business where you're traveling, oh, I'm doing hypnosis in Hawaii, and hey, I'm in, you know, Italy, and now I'm in Switzerland. It's like you still have to build an online business. You can't just show up in Hawaii and have a bunch of people want to do hypnosis with you. I'm not saying that can't work, but what I'm saying is you still have to build a business to do that.
Yes, I heard a guy once say, always remember the guy that wrote the 4-hour work week works 60 hours a week.
Mm-hmm. Did he?
Yeah.
I don't know if Tim Ferriss actually worked 60 hours a week.
Well, not say, but for years he did, you know, and now, you know, he can afford the $1 million business consultants to build his Facebook business and right. and this and that. So yeah, but people want to, and I know, close with this is, like you say, people come in and then they want to be up here. You know, how many times, especially I'm in the NLP world, I want to be like Tony Robbins. Well, first of all, you didn't start at 17. You're da-da-da-da-da, you know, and he started doing what we're doing. He had a little practice. He was helping a few people at a time, you know, doing Jim Rohn seminars, and then it just kind of exploded out in different ways.
He kept doing the work. Don't be afraid to start small. One of the first classes that I taught, not a certification course, but one of the first hypnosis classes that I taught for the community, I think had 2 people that showed up, and I was really disappointed. I was like, oh my gosh, like I must be terrible at this. This is awful. At the end of that class, I was grateful that there were only 2 people because it was like my first time teaching it. And I'm like, okay, the next time I teach it, it's going to be like this. And the next time I taught it, I had 14 people in the class. So I see newer hypnotists get hung up on this all the time. Don't be afraid to start small. You know, I had somebody the other day say, well, Erica, you know, it's a little embarrassing to only have 1 YouTube video out there on my channel. I'm like, no, it's not. I had 1 YouTube video for a long time. I mean, I have like 60 or 70 now, but it's been years. So don't be afraid to start small. Just keep going. Yeah, that's just an ego, fear-based thing.
Yeah, I remember I was at a conference and somebody was saying once, I taught it was like a 2-hour thing, but I had 4 people. And somebody said, did that upset you? I said, no, because I remember one time, kind of like what you said, I had a little class at a conference with 3 people. But one of the people in that class, I'm not exaggerating, ended up making me $250,000. Because he would bring people into Asia to teach. Yep. And he was sitting there, and I didn't know who he was. I'm like, well, I got 3 people. Let's have some fun. Da, 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 da. And yeah, so you never know where it's going to go.
And good for you, because you know what some people would do, and this is why I'm such a huge believer on hypnotists doing their own work. Some people would have taken that personally, and they would have been maybe not such a great teacher that day because they felt, insecure or bad about themselves. And then that third person in your class wouldn't have made you $250,000 because they wouldn't have thought that you were so awesome because you didn't show up and really teach the class, right?
Right. Well, and they, you know, the big thing they always say in theater, live theater, is it may be your 60th show, but that's that audience's first time seeing it. So it's, you know, our job is to make it fresh, whether mm-hmm. it's our, you like you said, when I was doing my weight loss work, you know, I was seeing 30, 40 people a week when I was really busy, and probably 25 of them were weight loss. But my job was to make it just as exciting for the 25th as the first.
Yeah.
So, and I've heard you say that at one of the things we were at, because we were at Solid Gold together a couple years ago, I think.
Wow. I mean, were you just here in 2018? Were you here this year? See, I missed half of Solid Gold this year. I was giving another talk, but I was there this year, 2019. And I think you were. Were you there this year? You were, weren't you?
Was this year or last year? I don't know, but we...
Well, it's all getting run together, Will. But so, yeah, I'm pretty sure you were there this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, yes, I was there this year, come to think of it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've been in this since the early 80s, so, you know.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
How is your acting kind of... How would you say that your... skills and everything you've learned in acting contributed to your profession?
Exponentially.
Really?
It's made me a better presenter, because even when I started presenting, first thing I thought is, it's a show.
Okay.
It's a show. You got mm-hmm. a beginning, you got a middle, you got a climax, and then you got to capture them and then build again. So when you see okay. a play, like let's use a musical, they start with a big opening number mm-hmm. that grabs your attention. This is how I do my trainer's training. You got to okay. grab their attention in a training, right? Mm-hmm. Do something to wow them. I don't care what it is. And there's different things we could do. And then I just, and it's constantly, so I'm always thinking it's a show.
Mm-hmm.
And not in a bad way, but if, you know, it, you know, because again.
Yeah, the brain works, right?
Well, yeah.
And motivate people and get them excited. And
when I was talking about this once with somebody, and they're like, well, and they started downplay. I go, well, I know who else thinks this way. A man named Tony Robbins. He gets 12,000 people in a stadium. And until you get to that level, don't criticize what he's doing.
Yep.
You know, it's a show. If you've been to his thing, it's a show.
Yeah.
You know?
I've seen, you know, video yeah. of
him. Yeah, yeah, so that, and I'm actually going back and I'm really excited. Looks like I'm doing some, I just launched a new website, hypnoticactor.com, that's being built as we speak.
Cool.
And it's taking this. And it's kind of like the one little area I did not use the hypnosis for in my personal life. Don't ask me why, right? I did it with my karate and my yep. exercise and all that. But it was like, so now I'm kind of, I'm going to New York next month and do a seminar for actors.
Nice.
You know, and I'm taking everything that we just talked about. How do you break in a new market? How do you do this, right? And partnering with an agent in New York that's going to, because he has the, you know, he's on the ground and yeah. all that. So, yeah, so it's kind of cool. But, yeah, I would say, and I tell a lot of my trainers when I'm doing trainers training, if at all possible, you should take an improv class.
Okay.
Because a lot of times you got to just be fast on your feet. You can't, you know, you're doing a training in this hotel and they're rehabbing two doors down. How can you, you know, and whatever. It's just improv. So, yeah, I love that. So, cool. So how do people get in touch with you again, Miss Erica, to get your books, get your seminars, to get on your mailing list?
Well, this has been so fun talking with you, Will. I think I could talk with you all day. You can find me at cascadehypnosistraining.com. You can find me online on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Erica Flint. You can also find me at ericaflint.com. It has links to all my books and all of those things. I love to connect with people, so you can friend me on those places and just ask me questions about hypnosis. I've got a YouTube channel, all sorts of stuff. So I would love to just connect with more people and continue this discussion and talking about hypnosis and helping more people.
Cool. And again, I'd like to thank Ms. Erica for sharing her time and her expertise. And I've seen her at conferences for many years and sharing, and she's one of the people that never holds back on giving information. She's always willing to share and to help people grow. So I'd like to thank you, Ms. Erica, for joining us on Spotlight On for the little National Federation of Neuro-Linguistic Programming. That's my little shirt. Right. And we'll see you soon.